Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Development and Events Committee meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Welcome to Labor Radio. I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Ellie Gilliland.
Thank you so much for joining us. Just quickly before we jump into the topic that we're going to be discussing on this episode, we'd like to give a special thanks and shout out to the Labor Radio Podcast Network for hosting podcasted versions of our show each month. Be sure to check that out at laborradionetwork.org to hear this episode as well as previous episodes that we've done and other labor-related podcasts as well. All right, so now on to the actual topic that we're going to be discussing. Nearly a year into the pandemic, many new compounding catastrophes have overshadowed the crisis still faced by our nation's frontline workers. We're no longer banging pots and pans each night at 7 p.m. to celebrate our local heroes. Many states have not instituted mandatory mask mandates or refused to enforce the ones that they do have on the books. And the strict lockdown orders we saw last spring have been largely abandoned. With the national vaccine rollout well behind schedule, many states, including us here in Oregon, have begun allowing indoor dining and gathering and group gatherings again. And still throughout all of this, little to nothing has been done to alleviate the enormous burden we've placed upon those workers who've put themselves in harm's way to keep our society from collapsing. There has been no minimum wage increase, there's been no nationwide hazard pay mandate, and there has been no Medicaid expansion to cover frontline workers' increased health risks. And to date, our government has only seen fit to send out two woefully insufficient survival checks to keep underpaid and overworked Americans from starvation, homelessness, and crushing debt. And as if this egregious lack of support wasn't enough, struggling workers have actually come under attack from large employers and the ownership class on multiple fronts. While billionaires saw their wealth grow by over $1 trillion, and the nation's top 100 corporations saw their profits increase by $3 trillion since the start of the pandemic, the tireless efforts by working people who made such staggering returns possible have gone largely unrewarded. Whether it's the disastrous precedent set by the Prop 22 vote in California, or the rash of anti-unionization efforts led by employers across the country, it's clear that the expectation from those in charge of our political and economic lives is that working people should simply shut up and be grateful for the opportunity to sacrifice themselves for the sake of increased corporate profits and the, you know, quote, reopening of our economy. So in contrast to all of that, you know, there was a new study that came out, I believe it was last month, that showed that the highest mortality rates, you know, the jobs with the highest mortality rates as a result of COVID. And it turns out that restaurant workers, and particularly line cooks, are the highest or have the highest mortality rates for jobs that exist right now. And so that's not surprising, you know, considering that in order to work in a restaurant, in order to make sure all of us are fed, people have to cram into small kitchens and, work in close quarters without real social distancing. Oftentimes it gets hot, so people might have to remove the mask, or, you know, any little, yeah, you know, sickness or cough someone has is going to be spread throughout that environment.
Yeah, and especially too, I mean, you've seen a really big rise in these kind of like fake storefront Grubhub, Uber Eats kind of delivery type environments where, you know, there are, yeah, lots of people making restaurants for multiple fake restaurants, or I guess I should call, yeah, it fake restaurants, kind of fake fronts of restaurants that are sitting in, you know, right, in the case here in Portland, they could be inside a truck or something, maybe even smaller than some sort of brick and mortar restaurant. So super interesting study. And I think it's something, it just kind of confirms something we've all been aware of, in that, you know, this delivery restaurant thing that's kind of keeping people in their homes is really not safe for the people actually delivering it.
Not at all. And, you know, I mean, yeah, it's like it is a lifeline for most people at this point where, you know, you need to have food, but you aren't able to go to restaurants and get it. So we have it delivered to us, but there are still people doing the dangerous work of gathering together and making it and then delivering it to us all around the, you know, cities all around the country. And another area in which, you know, so not only like the food chain is a big element that has been, the people have been struggling to keep that afloat throughout all of this. And so like, you know, frontline workers in restaurants and kitchens, that's one side of it. The other side of it is folks who work in our grocery stores, which is, you know, such a dangerous environment considering how many people come in and out of those spaces every single day. You know, they have things, you know, dots on the ground or like, you know, guides for tell you where to walk. But ultimately, it is kind of a free for all when you go into most grocery stores at this point. And, you know, working in that environment can be probably pretty scary. And, you know, one of the things that would seem pretty simple would be to make sure that people working in those environments in grocery stores are receiving adequate pay for the risk they are taking by doing that work. Unfortunately, we've actually seen kind of the opposite of that happen. And we're going to go into a little story here out of Long Beach, California. The Kroger Company, which is the largest grocery store chain in the country, they operate stores in California called Ralph's and a few other stores, and then here in Oregon, they are the proprietors of Fred Meyer Groceries. So they're a major, you know, grocery chain across the country. They are actually closing two stores that they have in Long Beach, California, and it is pretty much a direct result of the fact that the Long Beach City Council approved a temporary hero pay ordinance, which is essentially just hazard pay for the workers. It's, you know, what the city council is offering or demanding is that any grocery store that has at least 300 employees nationwide and more than 15 employees in Long Beach, in the city of Long Beach, pay an extra $4 an hour for a up to 120-day period to people working in those stores. So, you know, $4 an hour doesn't seem like much, but for someone who is making, you know, minimum wage or near minimum wage, that is actually a massive increase. And it, you know, on the flip side of that, it is not much to actually put yourself at risk every single day, but at least it is some form of compensation for taking on the risk that you are doing as a worker in those environments to make sure that all the rest of us have the ability to have food and keep, you know, sustaining ourselves. And so Kroger essentially, you know, they haven't exactly come out and said that the reason they're closing these stores is because of the hero pay the hero pay ordinance, but it is pretty clear that they chose these two stores in the city of Long Beach as a direct result of that city council vote. And they have said things to the effect that, like, if other cities, because there are other cities in California that are considering similar amendments, similar ordinances, and they have hinted that the company would likely shut down stores in those cities as well if this were to grow into other places. And so that's, you know, as I mentioned in the intro, like, you know, this is a pretty drastic attack on people who are doing the essential, you know, we over the time that this pandemic has raged on, we have sort of reevaluated who are quote unquote essential workers in our society, and people doing food work are 100% on the top of that list. And this is a pretty intense attack on those people who are, you know, risking themselves every day and who have seen COVID outbreaks in their work environments, you know, multiple times throughout the pandemic. And so it's unfortunately, it's not shocking that this is happening. This is kind of what you'd expect from a massive corporation. But the fact that it is not only, you know, it's coupled with the fact that early on in the pandemic, Kroger was highly celebrated for rolling out their, quote, hero pay initiative, where they provide a $2 bump an hour, or $2 an hour bump for all their workers around the country, and that was, you know, met to great applause, and they were celebrated for that, and that was instituted in April of 2020, And then quietly a month later in May, they rescinded that and basically took away that hero pay to, you know, when people stopped, you know, when people weren't looking anymore. And so it's sort of, you know, it just shows a larger trend that these companies aren't willing to compensate their workers for the very, you know, not only the work that they're doing, but also the risk that they're taking to be at that workplace.
It's so many different things compounded into one, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, it's the record profits, and then it's the kind of corporate part of this where, you know, a lot of their, you know, fixed costs, like their rent and other things like that, can't be controlled. And so, you know, that delta between kind of, revenue and profits is, you know, really easily controlled by them via how many human resources they have, like how many workers they have employed. And, you know, giving people, you know, a $4 per hour bump is just a lot more money in the aggregate than a $200 or $300, you know, lump sum right up front. And, exactly. You know, I think a really interesting thing to point out here too is, like, you know, you've seen these really big kind of corporate powers, you know, like an Amazon, you know, enter the grocery space. And, you know, I don't think many people these days have a mom and pop grocery store, you know, by their house. And I think, you know, fewer firms are starting up, you know, fewer and fewer firms are starting up every year. And so you get these single buyers, you know, for labor in different parts of the country. And that drives down wages, right? Like, you know, we talked about at the start, you know, these little pop-up delivery, you know, food kind of Grubhub, gig economy type environments. And, you know, you can have 4 to 5 people run 6 different restaurants from a single truck, right? Like, you know, I think a lot of this minimum wage stuff comes down to, you know, productivity and, you know, a conversation around, you know, hey, you know, if you show more value to the company, then you're going to get paid more. And, you know, it's your fault that you don't provide enough value. You know, we can get any kind of Joe Schmo off the street to come in and replace you. But I think that it's really important to call out here that as productivity increases, like, that isn't the only, you know, proof that there's like some sole function where productivity contributes to wage increases, right? It's a lot of this consolidation of corporate power. It's this kind of, hey, there are single buyers in a community, or there are only a few grocery stores, and so that drives down wages. And so not only is it this, you know, people are, you know, putting themselves in danger and deserve more money, but it's also been a buildup of, you know, the last 50 years of, you know, wages not keeping up to pace with productivity, you know, and people being forced into worse and worse situations. And then you add on that, like, gig economy stuff where people aren't being paid the right amount of being, you know, like you said, with Prop 22. So this is a really important story that I think not enough people are talking about.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, yeah, like, at this point, the last time I think that we saw the minimum wage, the federal minimum wage increase, was in, you know, during the Obama era. So that was, you know, I think it was early on. It was like pre-2010. And so it's been over a decade at this point since we've seen that increase. But on top of that, you know, if the minimum wage had kept up with productivity, it would be far above, you know, the $15 that's being called for at this point. It would be somewhere in like the $22-$23 range.
And usually those statistics are an average of, like, employee productivity. So, you know, maybe grocery store employee productivity hasn't gone up nearly as much as maybe some other more like computer science or some other more for oriented position. But I mean, it has gone up, and we've seen that, and wages have stagnated despite that. And so, you know, these hero bumps, you know, while they were nice little kind of marketing activities up front, you know, we kind of have seen them in a majority of cases go away very quickly. And also, you know, not only is there no money to go into the actual salary increases, but in a lot of cases, there's no money going into, you know, different processes to protect the workers either. So it's kind of on two fronts.
Yeah. I mean, I know on a previous episode, we talked about fast food workers and how, you know, at the early part of the pandemic, the companies, you know, the restaurants that they were working for weren't even providing them with masks. Like, there were workers who didn't have masks in the workplace, and they were provided with diapers and other things like that to put over their face, which is, you know, I mean, that's just not only – that's like insult to injury. Like, not only is the company refusing to actually provide you with the right personal protective equipment, but that's also like an indignity that they're making you withstand there. And, you know, just to sort of highlight what Elliot was just talking about, you know, not only have we seen productivity increases and, you know, the wages have not kept up with that, but on top of that, back in May, when the Kroger company rescinded their $2 an hour hero pay bump, they instead opted to do a one-time payment of $200 to $400 per employee, which, you know, certainly did not compensate for how much the wages that they would have made at that extra hero pay bump an hour between now and then, or then and now. But also, they reinstituted productivity quotas for their workers, and that the workers say discourage social distancing. And, you know, not only did they reinstitute those quotas and put workers at risk by reinstituting them, but they said that if workers, you know, the workers could be fined and potentially fired if they didn't meet those quotas, you know. So the workers are being required or being forced to meet increased productivity standards, but are not being compensated for it, you know, whether that be specifically at this company, but also just generally in the trend that Elliot was talking about in our economy, where wages have not kept up with productivity. And so, you know, coupled with that, like, this is all on the worker side, this is all incredibly bad. And when, you know, the companies talk, the reasons that they're closing down the Kroger's, the reason that they say they're closing down these stores as a result of these, you know, hero pay ordinances, is because they, you know, they say, like, well, it's just going to cut into, like, we aren't going to be able to continue operating if we have to pay that cost. And therefore, we're going to have to close these stores down. But the you know, their balance sheets show a different story. And basically, you know, the grocery industry over the course of the pandemic has seen record profits. Kroger, the company themselves, recorded $2.9 billion in profits through the third quarter of 2020, which is an increase of $1.2 billion from the previous year at that point. And of course, you know, instead of doing the thing that would help, that would make sense, that you would want to do for the workers who are making that profit possible, and redirecting it back to them by, you know, increasing their wages and providing them with better, you know, protective equipment and better healthcare and all those things. Instead, they're doing kind of the classic corporate move, which is directing that money, that profit increase, towards their investors. So, you know, in September, Kroger announced that they were doing a $1 billion stock buyback, which, of course, is very good for, you know, their corporate executives, and it's very good for their investors, but does absolutely nothing for the people, the working people who made that profit possible. And, you know, it's not just Kroger. That is kind of a trend that we have seen over the last 40 years around this country. But it is very egregious to see that happening in this moment, where these workers are not only just doing the job day in and day out in a normal environment, they're doing it in the middle of a pandemic in which they are risking their lives to do it. And the companies are just not recognizing that. And it's not only just the companies, but, like, our society, our economy as a whole does not seem to be recognizing frontline workers for the risk that they are taking. You know, if you are a soldier and you accept a dangerous mission, you get hazard pay. You know, you are accepting a role that is going to put you in harm's way, and therefore you are compensated for that. Obviously, not to equate what a grocery store worker is doing from a soldier.
Yeah.
I mean, arguably the grocery store worker is doing something far better for society than the soldier is, but they are knowingly putting themselves in harm's way.
Well, I think you could make the argument, you know, regardless of the kind of work, I think you could make the argument that in both cases, it's widely been a narrative around it, and then kind of little to no action, right? I mean, you hear every day about, like, kind of like veterans who, you know, exit the military, whether dishonorably or not, you know, they exit and they kind of have zero support. You know, there are things that, like, PTSD that are going to affect, you know, them, while on the other hand here, you know, we're seeing really long-term effects of COVID affect people. The same way we're kind of starting to, like, come to conclusions around concussions and other, like, really long-term stuff here. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I do think there are some parallels around the narrative and then kind of lack of follow through.
Yeah, you are 100% right on that, actually, because, I mean, we have a history in the society of really touting our veterans and, you know, doing so much, you know, to honor our veterans with, like, flyovers at sporting events and, you know, memorials, you know, on TV and commercials. But then you look at the state of, you know, veteran homelessness and suicides in this country, or, you know, the disrepair of the VA or the underfunding of the VA and things like that. So it's like there is this, yeah, this desire to celebrate them in a completely surface way, while on the back end not doing actually anything to help alleviate the suffering of
those people. Totally. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure lots of listeners are aware of all the stuff Jon Stewart has been really connected to, a lot of like 9/11 veterans in New York, and how badly, you know, kind of the long lasting effects there, and kind of the little to no interest of, you know, the government and the public at large. So,
yeah. And that's, you know, unfortunately, that's another tie in there, that like how quickly those, the 9/11 first responders were forgotten, and their, you know, their healthcare needs had to be fought for by someone like Jon Stewart in the halls of Congress. You know, we're of course in, at this point in the pandemic, we're seeing, you know, more deaths in each single day than we saw in from the 9/11 attacks. You know, that's every single day, and we at this point are just doing nothing as a society about it. You know, there are some very intense parallels between, you know, like early on in the pandemic, I think it was Whole Foods, which is owned by Amazon, they did not provide a pay bump to their workers, but what they did do was hand all of them shirts that they had to wear on duty that said hero, you know, on it. It labeled them as a hero, and they walked around with a shirt that, so, you know, that said hero on it, and everyone got to thank them. And so the company felt good by honoring them and showcasing this and saying, hey, we're calling our associates heroes now, but not doing anything to actually meaningfully help those people in a material sense. And the same thing is true with, you know, the 9/11 first responders. We honored them, you know, they will never, you know, will never forget, but actually we did totally forget. And those people have to continually fight to have have Congress re-up their coverage of their healthcare costs. And the same thing is of course true about just veterans in general in this country. They are celebrated when they're sent to war, and we forget about them when they come home. So there is just sort of a trend within how our society treats people that we ask to sacrifice for, you know, our society as a whole, to keep us, you know, safe, or keep us from fed or whatever it is.
And it really just goes back to, right, like as the way people buy has been shifting, you know, throughout the course of this pandemic, right? Like less in store, more online, more ordering, all of this stuff, right? You know, you could argue the productivity and the value of all these people has shifted. And, you know, there is no, you know, despite what, you know, someone wants to tell you, maybe from the right, there's no sort of like iron law of compensation where, you know, I as the capitalist, you know, basically pay you 5/6 of your productivity. And then that, you know, 1/6 is the profit that I get, you know, as the person taking on the risk of being, you know, providing the capital and all that stuff. And we're just really seeing a stagnation. And, you know, obviously this is a podcast format, we can't bring up charts, but I think everyone's aware of, you know, like we talked about at the top of the show, the stagnating of all this stuff starting in the 40s and kind of culminating in the 60s of this just really hard fall off in kind of, you know, wages following productivity. And, you know, everyone likes to look back to that time and talk about the broadening of the middle class, right? And talk about the growth economically. And so a lot of this stuff is, you know, it's just really silly where, you know, like you said, it's stock buybacks, it's increased profits for investors. But, you know, putting this money in the hands of people is also going to actually go back into the economy and, you know, drive growth. And, you know, I think, you know, obviously I think there's a limit to, you know, a lot of the counter arguments to this stuff is around, well, okay, why don't you just make it $25, right? There's a lot of like rhetoric around like AOC and the Green New Deal and all of this stuff. And I think it's really important to just really think about, I mean, there are limits to this. It's just been ignored for so long that we kind of have to make some drastic changes.
Exactly. You know, I mean, that is just sort of, again, it's just the larger trend that we've allowed to happen, the slide we've allowed to happen towards like the financialization of our economy as a whole. And, you know, the touting of profits and investors, investors' profits over just like the welfare of workers. And, you know, of course, it's not, you know, specifically, you know, Kroger is not the only perpetrator here, but being the largest grocery chain in the country, they, you know, the fact that they can't see fit to provide the people that are making their record profits possible with, you know, some meager benefit, you know, pay bump, is just sort of, you know, case in point for how our society has just completely forgotten working people in favor of, you know, just enriching the already enriched. And so just to sort of tie all this off, you know, we've been talking a lot about how dangerous it is to work in this environment and how they, you know, these workers do deserve these hero pay bumps. Just a few, you know, statistics here that according to the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, at least 134 grocery workers have died from COVID since the start of the pandemic, and more than 2,800 workers have been exposed to a positive case in their workplace. And so, you know, this is not just people crying wolf. Like, this is a real problem. Like, I remember actually early on, I think we did an episode of this show back in the spring or potentially, you know, early summer, and at that point we discussed how there were two different grocery stores in the Portland metro area who had workers who passed away from COVID, unfortunately. And I'm sure, you know, I haven't kept up with that specifically, but those numbers clearly have grown around the country. And, you know, as you mentioned earlier, even if you do not, you know, die as a result of COVID, there are long-term lasting effects that happen, yep, you know, as a result of it.
And I mean, and this whole conversation has been purely about like actual financial, like in terms of dollars and cents pay to your pocket. And, you know, we haven't even touched on benefits or kind of the other things.
Yeah.
That, you know, the way that society has changed, those things are now provided by your worker, right? And or your workplace or your employer in a lot of cases. So, you know, that's not even something we've touched on. You know, I don't know the status of Kroger, but I remember at the beginning of the pandemic, there were lots of like no PTO time for people who were sick.
Yes.
And, like, things like that. So, and I know that's largely changed, but, you know, I think, you know, on a case by case basis, you know, we don't know each individual kind of grocery store policy on that.
Yeah. I mean, not only no PTO, but like, you know, some places that do offer that oftentimes will say, hey, you know, or like, you know, with sick time, like, hey, you need to pull your sick time together to help this other coworker who may have run out of theirs, instead of just saying, hey, we will cover you as a company who can afford to do that, asking the other associates to pool their, you know, hard-earned sick time together to help someone else. You know, it's just sort of, it just speaks to the larger trend of like not having any care for the well-being of the people that we have deemed heroes and have tasked with holding our society together during this crisis, you know. And so, you know, obviously we, at the beginning of the show, we discussed the myriad attacks against working people that have happened as, you know, during this period. Not only is it things like the company itself, you know, Kroger shutting down workplaces instead of paying them their workers slightly more, but there's also been, you know, massive union busting efforts by companies across the country, you know, and none more notably than, of course, one of the country's biggest companies, Amazon. They, of course, are, you know, Jeff Bezos, who is now stepping down as the CEO, but that company, Amazon, is notorious for being anti-union and anti-worker. And, you know, here, just a recent example is that there was a warehouse facility in Bessemer, Alabama, and the workers there are in the process of unionizing, and they would be the first unionized workplace in the country. And Amazon has gone to such lengths to actually hire a Koch brother-backed union-busting firm to come in and consult and help them shut down that unionizing effort in that workplace. They've done things that we've discussed many times, like come in and set up fancy websites that provide misinformation, mass text messages to the workers to misinform them, as well as enrolling them into, you know, fake classes where the instructors basically attempt to scare workers away from joining the union. So it's, you know, there's a lot more that we could get into. Unfortunately, we're running out of time here, but needless to say, it is not just the grocery industry, it is not just Kroger, but it is our economy in general. We are seeing just a in this period of unprecedented crisis, we are seeing a massive increase in the effort to squash any attempt by working people to raise their heads up and to get, you know, their own fair share and their own fair shake in this this time of crisis. And so with that, unless there's anything else you'd like to add, Elliot, I think that we will be signing off for the episode. You know, we will, of course, be back with you in a month to discuss so much more. You know, there's always more developments in this country about around working people. And obviously, you know, we haven't even touched the surface of how these companies are attacking workers in this pandemic and more generally. But we will be back with you in a month. If you would like to continue this conversation with us, you know, outside of this realm, you can find me on Twitter at Michael B. Kath. I'd be happy to, you know, DM you or anything like that and discuss these things. Otherwise, we will be back with you in March. Thank you so much for listening. I